Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Thursday, June the 4th, 2026. 6-4-26, 13 coming up on 14 minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Time. And, you know, I do want to mention, because a lot of people ask me who live outside the listening area how you can listen to this program. You can go to the website. It always streams there, WWGH1071.com. Or you can download the free, absolutely free, TuneIn app on any mobile device, smart television, Alexa, Google Dot, and search WGH Talk, and you can listen to us and stream us live anywhere in the world. Of course, a big discussion here this morning is a case that is important to all people in Marion, all people in Ohio, and beyond, because of the hit documentary last year, Surviving Ohio State. Let me run down this here really quick. The years-long battle, legal battle, between Ohio State University and survivors of former university physician Richard Strauss's sexual abuse is over. Ohio State and the Strauss survivors reached a $100 million settlement agreement, ending all but one legal claim related to Strauss. Ohio State and 279 of the 280 individual remaining Richard Strauss survivors involved in the pending litigation have reached settlements in principle in a total of $100 million. Ohio State and Strauss survivors said in a joint statement, the university's Board of Trustees has now publicly ratified these agreements in principle, and all parties thank the mediators for their assistance. The mediation and its confidentiality are continuing as the parties work to finalize the details of the settlements, and additional information will be shared as appropriate. A special master appointed by the court will interview each of the over 200 men involved in litigation across five active plaintiff groups. The interviews will determine the level of harm for each survivor and the amount of settlement money they will receive. The Board of Trustees approved the settlement 14-0 in a meeting Wednesday, one day after Judge Michael Watson dismissed the case without prejudice. And of course, this all relates back to Dr. Richard Strauss abusing hundreds of male students, mostly athletes, under the guise of medical exams from 1978 to 1998, when he was allowed to quietly leave the university after an internal investigation found evidence of sexual abuse. Strauss died by suicide in California in 2005. A long road here, and no guest I would rather have on right now than the guest who joins us via telephone. She was the journalist who kept this story alive and was one of the stars of the hit HBO documentary Surviving Ohio State. So interested to get her opinions on this morning, because as you've heard if you've been listening to this program this morning, the opinions have been mixed on this. Always glad to welcome to these microphones Colleen Marshall. Colleen, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. Thanks for having me on this morning. Appreciate it.
Colleen, it's kind of interesting. When I first heard about this last night, and even talking about it this morning with some of the listeners, mixed reviews on this settlement. How do you feel?
First of all, I'm curious. What are the reviews you're getting? Give me the thumbnail. I was walking my dogs. I didn't hear it.
Well, no, the reviews seem to basically be, if this makes the survivors happy, that's good, and that falls on them. But essentially, this is not what the girls in Michigan State got. Ohio right. State gets $1 billion in tuition every year. $100 million is chump change to them, and I'm sure they were more than happy to agree to this, to get this right. out of the press. I think that's the reviews.
And, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people in those plaintiff groups who would agree with you. Because one of the conclusions that was drawn by the documentary makers was the stark difference between what we would give to women and what, like the victims of Dr. Larry Nassar, and what's going to these men. And I have always said, you know, I sent both of my children off to college. They're only a year apart. They're a year and a half, maybe, but they were a grade apart in high school. Sent my son off to Ohio State. I sent my daughter off to OU. I didn't want either one of them to be sexually assaulted. And I certainly wouldn't want either of them to be sexually assaulted at the hands of somebody who worked for their university. So I think that I think those opinions from your listeners are valid. And I will tell you my theory. I don't have proof of this, but I've heard rumblings about this. Ohio State has been fighting this so strong for so many years. A number of the plaintiffs, earlier plaintiffs, settled for even less money. There was a $61 million agreement so far that went out to about 300 of the victims. And think about this, Scott. We're talking about hundreds of victims of this one man. And his actions were known to university officials. There is no doubt of that. There is no doubt that university leaders, especially the coaches who worked with these guys daily, knew this was happening. They may not have known the depth or how often each of these guys was being molested, but they knew what Strauss was doing. So hundreds of them got $61 million earlier, and now this $100 million settlement goes out. But here's what I've been keeping in mind. The university had filed a motion to dismiss any plaintiff who was victimized before 86 or 88, because that's the time that the Title IX law changed. And under Title IX, which is this federal document, federal law that governs universities, under Title IX in 1986, it was changed to allow victims of sexual abuse at the hands of a university employee to sue the university. So what the university was arguing is any victim who was molested, even drugged and raped by Richard Strauss before 1986 should be thrown out of the case. And there were 77 of them who faced the possibility of being tossed out. And I think, and some of this comes from off-the-record conversations I've had, I know the other survivors were very concerned that the earliest victims of Richard Strauss would get nothing. And I think before the decision was made on that motion to toss these guys out, they said, you know, we've got to settle. We can't reject these guys, some of them who were harmed in ways that were life-changing by Richard Strauss. We can't allow them to be kicked to the curb. And that's, again, I don't have proof of that, but that's my theory of why they decided. And the other thing is, this trial was looming in October. Some of these guys really wanted to go to court. Some of them did not want to get up on the witness stand and reveal these intimate, terrible things that happened to them. And probably attorneys for both sides would rather have settlement than a very, very long trial. And the judge had indicated he would not kick the date of this trial. It was happening in October if they didn't reach settlement. And I think that was also looming over all of them.
You know, that's a very interesting insight to this. And maybe one of the reasons the reactions have been the way they have been this morning President, Ohio State President Bellum Khanda, his statement: the survivors of the Strauss abuse are all Buckeyes and will always be part of our family and our community, and I firmly believe that. We continue to be very grateful to them for their courage in coming forward and reaching a final resolution is very important to us and an important step forward. A lot of this was OSU owning up to what happened. Now, former President Drake had apologized in the past. That sounds like an apology from Bellum Khanda. Certainly not happy that this went on, but they weren't there. Is there any solace for the victims in what the university is saying?
I don't believe there's much solace for them. And as you mentioned, this is an agreement in principle. We're calling it a settlement, but the university unanimously approved it, the Board of Trustees, and all of these survivors had to sign on individually. All of them but one did. But I think this public face, this public, oh, you're part of our family, is so different than what they were doing behind the scenes. Because they were so aggressively and vigorously working to get these guys tossed out of court and trying so hard to say that they, you know, that they're not in fault. And this is the thing that I've also, you know, come to realize over the many years that I've covered this case. You know, the university's public faces, well, no one here now was around when Strauss was here. None of us are at fault. The university of today isn't at fault. But here's what you've got to realize about Ohio State and any big university like this. They fundraise and build their endowment on the glory of their athletes. They celebrate. They will have special on-field ceremonies celebrating national championships from the past. They do it on the football field. They do it at the baseball diamond. They celebrate, and they will have these athletes come and be featured, and you know, and they get a lot of money on the glory of these athletes. It's an institutional practice to use the athletic program as a fundraising vehicle. Most of these victims were athletes, so they want to celebrate their prowess and their accomplishments and then ignore the pain that came at the hands of institutional negligence. And so I think these acknowledgments, while they're kind, and this university, the new president seems sincere about that, you want to say, where was that concern over the last 8 years? Where was that concern when you allowed a sexual predator to operate on campus for 20 years. And so I think for a lot of these guys, that rings hollow.
Well, and based on that, I want to play this clip because a person who was president of Ohio State during a good portion of this was Gordon Gee, president emeritus now, still with the university. And in late April, I got a chance to sit down with him because he was deposed earlier on in the year in this case. And this is what President Gee had to say back in April when I asked him about this particular, about his deposition in this case.
The other thing that I would say has been newsworthy since we spoke last, you've been ordered to give a deposition in the OSU case in regarding Dr. Strauss and the OSU wrestlers and other people involved in that. I know you can only speak so much on this, but what's the progression and what does having to give a deposition mean to you in that case?
Well, I've done a number of depositions because university presidents are regularly sued and have to depose or and be deposed, and so it wasn't right. You know, I'm a lawyer, but they're never pleasant because it's adversarial to say the least. Obviously, I can't speak to the case. I have had my deposition, and so I am through with that part of it. But I think that you're dealing with very troubled issues, and I think from everything that I know and everything that I saw, and everything that I now have learned because I went through this deposition, I think that the university did the right thing. I don't think that, and I think including the fact that they have come to an agreement and compensated a number of these individuals, but I beyond that, I don't believe that I can really say anything.
You know, a lot of people thought, because in our last interview you said you were not aware that any of that was going on. And a lot of people thought that you being put under oath, under deposition, that would change. For people who thought that was going to change, what do you say to that group of people?
Well, I didn't know. And, it's funny. My dear friend and colleague who was really my right-hand guy here during that particular part of my tenure was Herb Asher. And Dr. Asher and I were just with some friends the other day, and we were talking about the fact that we never saw this happening. You know, I tell you, when I think about it, they say, well, you know, there are these 177 or 200 or 300 people, and they said, why didn't you know anything about it? And I said, well, you know, every Friday or every Saturday night, I go out to the bars and I go out to parties and I go out to 21st birthday parties. I am very well known for having an open office. Students can come in anytime. Anyone can come in anytime. And obviously, I had people could send me notes, whatever they wanted to do. In all of that time, I never did ever receive one note from anyone about this issue. Or anyone say something to me in a student event. So I have no idea what happened, but clearly it was not. It was by in no ways public, and it certainly didn't come to my office.
The one thing I wanted to ask you, one final question on this, and I think it's the question people are most curious about. Do you have any memories of Dr. Strauss? I mean, even in the documentary that was produced about this, there's very little footage of him, very little anything. Do you remember him being here or remember anything about him?
Well, I'm not certain I ever met him. I could have done. I mean, I went over to Larkin's Hall, I think it was called at the time, and I would go over there just to visit because I kind of wander around. And but I never did remember him. I know that several people who worked with me did remember him, but that was the only thing that I ever heard about him was from people who had met him sometime while he was here.
You know, as we go on,
President Gordon Gee Emeritus on this program in April. When you hear that, Colleen, what do you think?
A lot of things. I'm trying to remember. Scott, do you know off the top of your head what year he left? I can't remember.
The first time, it was the late 90s, and the second time would have been 2012, 2013, somewhere
right
in there.
But he was there when Dr. Strauss went through the disciplinary hearing. He was there when Dr. Strauss there was a back and forth with him. He was reported to the medical board after he reported another doctor to the medical board for trying to discipline him. There were a lot of high-level activities by the university at that time. And you're saying that the president of the university didn't know that one of his doctors was being reported to the medical board and did not know there was a disciplinary hearing? This was after Stephen Snyder Hill, the initial whistleblower, went to a physician, Dr. Grace, who was the boss of Dr. Strauss, and said, this guy molested me. I was sexually assaulted by this man. And if you remember, not just from the documentary, but from some of my reporting, Stephen Snyder Hill was then called into a meeting the next day, and they called Strauss into the meeting. He had to sit across the table from a guy who sexually assaulted him and be told, you're wrong, you're mistaken, you know, be berated as a student. And he luckily was smart enough to say to Dr. Grace, if you're telling me he's never molested anybody before and you've never had any complaints about this guy, put it in a letter. I want it in writing. And he kept that letter, and it became a key piece of evidence. But that letter was a lie because, as it turns out, Dr. Grace didn't report that another student had complained about. This was at the Student Health Center. These weren't athletes. Another student complained about him the day before, and a third student complained 2 days later. All of that kicked off the eventual disciplinary hearing. So you're telling me a doctor had a disciplinary hearing and was eventually told you can no longer work in the student health center, and that didn't rise to the attention of the university president? And I will tell you something else that I've heard, not only from these survivors, these victims, but I've heard it from people who I personally know who were students on the campus back then. Larkins Hall, you heard Gordon Gee mention, well, certainly I was in Larkins Hall. Larkins Hall was open to the public, and it was known to be a hangout for sexual predators, men who were coming in daily to watch these young students, 18, 19-year-old students, showering. They could stand and watch them. Some of these guys were caught having sex in the bathroom, caught by a coach, by the wrestling coach, Hellickson. He admitted, yeah, he would chase these guys away. This was known as a hangout for perversion. And these students, Dan Ritchie, one of the wrestlers who was interviewed by me, told me they would have to, it was like a line of people watching them daily walk in and out of the showers, strangers. Larkins Hall was known for that. Eventually, the university, now the building's gone, but eventually, it took years, but the university cleaned that up. It's not possible that people at that level of the university didn't know what was going on in Larkins Hall. It was witnessed daily by coaches, by doctors who were in and out of there, by administrators who were in and out of there. So I find it so hard to believe that people in positions of authority didn't know what was happening there. Maybe not specifically what Strauss was doing every day, including pleasuring himself in the showers in front of these young men and spending 3 to 4 hours at a time in showers with young students. So and coaches didn't see that? It all rings hollow to me, all of it. And maybe, you know, I've been covering this so long that I'm starting to think, you know, I'm so disturbed by what happened at that university. And I've pointed this out before too. You know, we are a Buckeye family in this house. My kids were born at University Hospital. It's the only undergrad college my son would apply for, because it's the only place he wanted to go, and he did. And my daughter got both of her master's degrees there. We love this university, but these guys were mistreated, and this case has gone on too long.
You know, Colleen, and I do want to, we checked it here, 98 is when President Gee left the first time around. But somebody like Gordon Gee, and somebody else who has been the focus of this, assistant wrestling coach at the time, Jim Jordan, today, can they breathe a sigh easier? No more depositions, this not being front and center in the news anymore, no more newspaper articles after this is all settled out. Is this good for them?
I think Jim Jordan has to be breathing a sigh of relief, although this never hurt him politically. He's pretty strong within his district, which, Marion, you're in that district for. I believe that borders have changed so frequently. It didn't hurt him politically, but reputationally, it certainly did. It's interesting, a number of the depositions were released and filed with the court so that the media and the public could have could scrutinize them. His was not. Neither was Gordon Gee's. I read Andy Geiger's, the former athletic director, front to back, and his was released. And he knew what was going on at Larkins Hall. He knew about the atmosphere there. He, too, denied knowing exactly. He had heard rumblings, he said, of Strauss. But Jim Jordan's deposition was not publicly released, and I doubt it never will be now. So that has to be. This was good news for Jim Jordan. Mm. It was good news for any of them who might have been called to the witness stand. I do know some things that happened during Jim Jordan's deposition, because I've talked to people who were in the room, including survivors. I do know that he denied any knowledge of this, and I do know at the end of the deposition he was asked if he wanted to say, some of the people in that room wrestled for him. And he would not, what I was told is he would not look them in the eye.
For somebody like Jim Jordan, or for even somebody like former President Guy, who we just heard the clip from there, I don't know that we can directly say for sure what's going on in their mind, or exactly say for sure what they were doing. But is it, in your opinion, Colleen, from somebody who's covered this for a while, would you say Gordon Guy is lying when he's saying what he's saying, or he doesn't remember? What do you take that as?
I would never accuse someone of lying because I don't know what's going on in their head. I don't know their memories. And I will give you an example. I've been doing this a long time and talked to someone on the phone who, you know, told me about a story that I had interviewed her about many years ago. And I'm like, oh, you know, I had no memory of it. And I said, you know, look in the archives and I'll see if I can find this interview with you. And I'm thinking, I wonder who really interviewed her. Then I found her and it was me. So it's possible to have, you know, things from years ago that you have no memory of. And I have a terrible memory, and so I can believe that. I do not believe overall that institutionally the university can deny that administrators and coaches and people at the level of Gordon Guy knew. Certainly, Andy Geiger acknowledged that in his deposition, that he had heard about it, that he had heard about what was happening at Larkins Hall, that, you know, that he, and he seemed to be genuinely sorry for what happened to these guys. I don't think Geiger knew the level of the depravity, knew the persistence and consistence of the sexual assaults being undertaken by this one man, how long it went on. I've been told, you know, the fallout of this. There were suicides by some of these victims. And I do not believe that Andy Geiger or Gordon Guy would have been aware of that, that, you know, it happened after they left the campus and just simply couldn't live with it, with what had happened to them. But I do sincerely believe that those coaches all knew. I've talked to guys who had conversations with the coaches about it. And even Hellickson himself, who was interviewed by someone else, not the documentary, but part of the clip ended up in the documentary, Hellickson said that he and Jim Jordan talked to the doctor about it. And said, hey, you know, some of these guys think you're too hands-on. Too hands-on? That's how you left it? And when the doctor said, no, I'm just being thorough, they dropped it. That's as far as they took it. Even though they were hearing these complaints year in and year out.
You know, it's interesting, Colleen, because one of the victims here, and I think you mentioned him earlier, Steve Snyder-Hill, said, the thing that we get to live with is OSU is guilty. There's a documentary that says they're guilty. That's a quote. Are there winners and losers in this now that we are at the end, or have both sides won? Has Ohio State lost? It's framed in that way, in a lot of cases, that they have admitted guilt, Ohio State, and that the victims are going to get something here, some compensation. But is either side leaving this well or worse off than before?
Nobody's doing handstands about this case. And I will tell you that I think Ohio State, and I say this as someone who has done crisis management advice for corporations when I was practicing corporate law many years ago. I think they should have had a corporate advice strategist who told them from the beginning, you've got to get this behind you. That they, you know, you can't escape this. It happened. It happened, and you've got hundreds of victims. And I think the way that Michigan State handled Dr. Nasser, the way that Penn State handled Jerry Sandusky, there was a realization, an acknowledgement that we messed up and we need to pay a price and we need to do it quickly and we need to get this behind us. Instead, Ohio State publicly says, hey, sorry about that, and then launches into spending millions, multi-millions. I think the last time I checked, and it's been a year, one attorney had been paid more than $30 million in this case by the university. They instead launched this long legal battle, doing everything they could to get plaintiffs tossed out, to get the case rejected, to fall back on the statute of limitations. And this is what I want to say to people who say, well, the university, there's the statute of limitations. They had to comply with them. The statute of limitations is an affirmative defense. You do not have to assert it. But the university chose to try to argue the statute of limitations. Of course, that was tossed out on appeal because the appellate court rightly concluded that the university had actively hidden this from these guys and covered up for Richard Strauss. So that was tossed out. But months, almost a year was spent arguing about the statute of limitations, and millions more in legal fees were racked up because of it. So the university is not coming out looking like the benevolent protectors of students in this case. Their reputation took a giant hit, and this is going to follow them for a very long time. And these guys aren't walking away with life-changing money. Nobody's walking away with life-changing money out of this. There are 279 plaintiffs. It's a $100 million settlement, but 40% of that off the top will go to the attorneys. They're going to be dividing, you know, what's left over in the pot. And, you know, some of them have spent years publicly fighting this. And they're exhausted. They're exhausted. And the whole thing is sad for both sides. And for alumni, for people like my family who, you know, have been proud Buckeyes, it's like, geez, what did this institution do? And where were they when these young guys were being molested and drugged and raped? Where were they?
Well, and there are a few questions based on that I want to make sure we get in here this morning. You know, one thing when reading this story that a lot of people are uncomfortable with is that now a special master will be appointed by the court to review what these men suffered and determine the level of harm of each survivor, right. And that will be that will determine the amount of money they get. That right. sounds a little rough. People who've suffered this.
It is, but you know, how else do you do this? Because there are people, and because his story is public, I can use him as an example because he quite bravely publicly revealed this to me. Not long after I interviewed Stephen Snyder Hill, who was my initial interview on tape about being molested by Strauss, and this would have been, I don't know, 2019, I guess. But not long after I interviewed him, someone sent a copy of that interview, like a link to it, to Al Novikowski, who lives in Canada, who lives on the western end of Canada. And north of Victoria there. And he contacted me, and I did just the most heartbreaking interview of all the interviews I did here was with Al Novikowski. Al Novikowski was a hockey player who was junior national champion, you know, led parades in Canada. So you can imagine what a good hockey player he was if he was the national champion in Canada. He was heavily recruited by Ohio State, came here on a full-ride scholarship. Everyone expected him to eventually end up in the NHL. That was his plan. He was going to get a little seasoning at Ohio State, and he was going to join the NHL. For whatever reason, Dr. Strauss honed in on him and made him go through these invasive examinations. It's like nothing he had ever had before. And I'm talking about, I don't want to be too graphic here on, you know, in the morning, but let's just say they were invasive examinations. And if he did not submit to them, he would not be allowed to go on the ice. Mm. And Strauss more or less said, I have to do this if you want to compete. He went to his coach and said, I can't take these exams anymore. Why is this guy doing this to me? And his coach said, don't worry about the doctor. Get out there on the ice. Ignored him. Ignored his concerns. He started drinking. He couldn't play. He just tried. You know, this is, he was 18 years old. He just was overcome with stress and trauma over this. And he showed up for practice late one day and got kicked off the team. Then ended up going to the student health center a month or so later. He developed a drinking problem. Went to the student health center for another problem. The doctor drugged and raped him. He happened to be the doctor on duty at the student health center that night, drugged and raped him. That level of harm is, and he never did make it to the NHL. His career path was ruined. His life was ruined. He dropped out of college. He was the victim of rape. Never told anyone until he called me all those years later and revealed for the first time what had happened to him at the hands of Dr. Strauss. Now, his level of harm is extreme. It was career. It was health. It was mental health. It was life-changing, what Dr. Strauss did to him. So the special master will interview him and hear that entire story and understand this is someone who suffered greatly. And I'm not trying to diminish the harm given to people who were molested by Strauss once or twice over a semester, but there will have to be a comparison to the level of harm by this special master who is trained in this and who has done it before. I don't know who it will be, but this court, this Judge Watson in this trial, I'm sure will do his best to carefully pick the special master, what's known as a special master, whose job it is to, you know, determine harm levels. You know, when you hear Al Novikowski's story, you want to say, give him $100 million, you know? Right. He suffered so much, and he had such life-changing harm caused by this, and he had reported it to his coach. He took it to the person he should have taken it to and was dismissed. So his level of harm will be significant, and I would think that the damages awarded to him will be significant.
Well, and Colleen, because of what you've just said, you did keep this story alive when other people were not reporting on it in Columbus media. Going up against Ohio State, I'm sure they did not want to hear this story put on.
No, I don't think I'm going to be invited to any parties over there.
Well, isn't it interesting how that can happen, though? That's the way it goes in the end. But did you ever receive any serious pressure from Ohio State reporting on this, or from the people you work with, or for?
Yes, but I will tell you, it came in conversations that I would agree would be off the record. But I will tell you, I got phone calls at my house and was basically told, I could say this, because when I agree to go off the record with someone, it stays off the record, and I don't even tell it to my boss. But I will tell you that there was more than one person who called and said to me, you know, the university today isn't responsible for this. We shouldn't be held responsible for this. And I said to them what I said to you earlier. You did not directly cause the harm. You are the only ones who can make it right.
Well, and so
that was my response to that. And it doesn't, you know, and I also, you know, somebody calling and saying, we don't want you to do this story has never worked, at least not with me. It doesn't work. I know you don't want me to do this story. I'm not stupid. I know you don't want this out there. It has to be told.
Well, and I guess that's where we're leading here, is that, you know, losing a relationship that you had with Ohio State, being a Buckeye family, keeping these stories alive, hearing these stories, doing these exclusive interviews, being a part of the documentary, going through this, reporting on this better and like nobody else was doing. When you heard the settlement yesterday, what was your personal reaction?
My personal reaction is it's not enough. Not for that level, for the number of victims and for the length of this, for, you know, there was institutional neglect for 20 years. I mean, we can't forget. Dr. Strauss is the person who did this. He's no longer with us. But there was institutional neglect for two decades. And now there's been 8 years of trying to wrangle your way out of it. I don't think this price tag is enough. And I'll tell you something else that we don't know yet, Scott, because they're still hammering out the details. A lot of these guys over the years have told me what they really want is for the university to not just say, hey, sorry, but to acknowledge that they were at fault, that the university, you know, the depth of the university neglect here. It's going to be interesting to see when this is all said and done and they hammer out the details, because none of these attorneys will talk to me right now. They can't. I've been promised interviews later, but it'll be interesting to see the public face of the university at the end of all this, the level of their acknowledgement, and there's also an effort by a lot of these guys to say they've got to set up a system where this can't happen again, where there has to be a reporting system that's reliable for students who find themselves in this situation. Because, you know, the university is massive. There are 50,000 people on that campus at any given day. Chances are there's going to be a sexual predator on the campus again. There's got to be a system, a reporting system that is reliable and helpful for these students, because so many of them went to coaches, went to physicians, went to trainers and reported this, and their complaints fell on deaf ears. So there, I will be interested to see if there's a reporting system set up to support students in the future.
Well, and I think, Colleen, and I appreciate the time this morning. In our final few minutes, I just want to ask you this, because I think I've talked to a lot of these victims, you know, long after you talked to them, but Steve Snyder Hill has been on the show, Fred Feeney has been on the show, Rocky Ratliff has been on the show discussing these matters. I've interviewed you a couple times on this. And these victims feel like you're their mother or their sister. They have said that you, because you kept this alive when other people weren't. And
that's
you were a part of the documentary, and you went, you know, to the mat for them, and I think a lot of them feel that way in regard to you, and you have suffered, you know, the turning of the back of Ohio State on you, and in particular case, or being asked not to report things. At the end of the day, personally, looking back on this now, what does this mean in your life? How has this changed you? How has this affected you?
It's not that I ever had Pollyanna glasses about a place like Ohio State, but it has certainly been eye-opening at how money and power, when it's in the hands of a few, how it can be used to try to control the narrative and to re-victimize the vulnerable. And I've watched this play out and had such disappointment in the way the university was handling it. And I guess it made me a little more cynical. I cover politics. I'm the political director at the station. You wouldn't think anything could make me more cynical than politics. but this has certainly been... I have felt, and it's so funny, just the most recent protest at the Woody Hayes Center. I was there because, as you know, you may have known, a fire chief here, the former fire chief, came forward and revealed he was victimized by Strauss as a 15-year-old high school student when Strauss used university resources to do a study on body fat in high school kids. He came and molested a bunch of teenagers. And this was revealed. And I was at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center where there was a protest and where they were publicly talking about this. Not only the fire chief, but a deputy chief from the police department came forward and revealed he had been molested by Strauss. So I was standing there talking to these guys ahead of time. And one of them came over and introduced me to somebody else and said, she's been like our mom in this case. And it almost brought tears to my eyes. It's like they needed a couple of things. And whether I fulfilled that or not, they needed someone to believe them. And they needed someone to care about what happened to them. And I hope I fulfilled some of that in some small way for these guys, that I helped them with that. Because at the beginning, they were all called liars. And they were all mocked and made fun of, especially online. And I hope I provided a presence through that in being someone who said, I believe you.
Yeah, with a quick 2 minutes left to go here, Colleen, does this just now become a footnote in history, or will this be looked upon as a major blunder, horrible event in the history of Ohio State?
I think the latter. I think this is going to follow them reputationally for a long time. And, you know, you mentioned Stephen Snyder Hill saying this case will be referred to in the future. It certainly will be. It will become part of case law, probably. And it will also become, you know, this when people are talking about crisis management, they're going to point to this case because it was so horribly mishandled by the university. Mm. And so I think this is going to be a stain on Ohio State for a very long time to come. I mean, people are still going to pack the stadium on football Saturday. I watch the games every week. We have a neighborhood group. We all get together. We're all Buckeye fans. And you know what else, Scott? We've got to remember all of these guys who played for the university still love the university and still support. Like the wrestlers who were, assaulted by Strauss, still support the wrestling team. Some of these guys are still wrestling coaches. So I there's such irony. There is such a juxtaposition of the way they view the university and the teams and the athletics and the way they view the board of trustees in this case, which is very different because I think they think of themselves, these survivors think of themselves as the true Buckeyes. And think of the Board of Trustees as this elite group that would not own up to what had happened. Mm.
Well, Colleen, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and giving us this much time this morning in this case. And you know, I always give you a lot of praise for the work you do on NBC4. But in this particular in this particular matter, though, I do want to say that to keep this story alive, that did matter, and obviously did matter for a lot of people. And I don't think this is one of those stories that people are just going to dust by the wayside. And this one, not that all stories don't matter, but this was one of those ones I think that people will remember for a long time, and what a kudo to you for keeping it alive, because as you said, a lot of people were called liars for a long time, and if nobody's shining the light on them, I don't know what would have happened. So a lot of people really should look into the journalism work that you have done and did in this case, because it is very superlative.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for always letting me come on. I feel like I have a therapy session when I talk to you.
Thank you, and check out Colleen Marshall on NBC4. Thank you, Colleen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The one and only Colleen Marshall, always a very good interviewer and the best interviewee and the best interviewer in the business. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And then I would have to go in with the same line. Well, get ready, because it's now time to play Bozo's Grand Prize. Well, one day, I don't know,